You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Stacy Grissom. Stacy is the head of content at Bark, the company building a next generation brand for dogs and dog people. Stacy leads the team behind the Bark's interactive, humor-driven content strategy, and is a co-author of the New York Times bestseller, Dogs and Their People. She lives in New York City with her rescue mutt, Pim. In fact, her email description lists her job titles in this order: belly scratcher, personal assistant to Pim, and Bark Post editor-in-chief. Stacy, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And you talked about being in a new office, and I confessed to being in a new office also. And I home office and record the podcast from home, and astute listeners will observe that mid-move, I actually missed recording an episode. So we're making up for it with this amazing episode featuring Stacy from BarkBox. But my new office is bigger, a little more inviting, and features carpet, which I think my dog, Murphy, who's a black lab mutt, is a fan of because, and this is a little bit of information and also a warning in case there's new sound effects this week, she seems to enjoy, because she is sitting about a foot and a half from me, snoring. So if you hear a light, soft snoring noise, that is one of our dog listeners, and maybe our dog listenership will go up this week. I can only hope. So you, the other thing that we didn't record that we should have included was finding a bark-free zone with which to do interviews, which I can imagine at Bark is
a
bit of
a little tricky.
Yeah,
it's definitely a bit tricky. We have three floors instead of two. And so trying to find the good spots with no wrestling or barking is more difficult than you would think.
That is hilarious. Cause as I was thinking about that, I'm like, well, what, and then it occurred to me, well, of course you're in the dog business. It comes with its own sound effects there.
Yep. So our customers. So we've gotta deal with it.
Well, I love
deal with
that.
All of the shenanigans.
I love that focus, and I love talking about dogs as customers. But before we get there, in reading your bio, I always, you know, it's one of those kind of Pavlovian responses. I think bark, and I want to say box, but it's always a good reminder that bark itself has I can't think of a dog-like metaphor other than tentacles, which has nothing to do with dogs. Many different breeds within it, maybe. We'll go
good
with
one.
That. Yeah, I'll try. So what is there, if I'm riding with you in an elevator to a quiet dog-free floor, and it's a quick ride, what is your kind of elevator pitch on what all happens at Bark?
Yeah. So at Bark, we are obsessed with dogs specifically our dogs. And we also really love the people who love dogs. And we know that just products alone aren't, it doesn't encompass like every way that you interact with dogs in your life. And so we have BarkBox and we have BarkShop. And we also focus on building out entertainment for dog people. And that's a lot of what I focus on at Bark.
Entertainment for dog people. Now, I love that. And I also love, you know, some of the distinct nomenclature and I'm pausing because it's really more than nomenclature, because it's really how you are positioning what you're talking about and how you're talking about it. Like earlier when you mentioned the dogs being your customers, but you know, and thinking about that beyond products and beyond entertainment, I really think that it defines you in a very different way.
Totally. And I think like we've kind of been riding this wave of a changing culture that we've seen, you know, in the United States and around the world, that dogs are more a part of our families than ever before. And so, you know, because of that, we think of them differently than our parents' generation thought about them. And because of that, there has to be new nomenclature and ways that we talk about dogs and think about dogs and cater to our four-legged loves.
Well, and it all reminds me, and it kind of got me started thinking about this when I saw your co-founder, Henrik, speaking at South by Southwest a year or two ago. And he was talking about the difference, and it's a very little one, but since then it's a very little one in terms of nomenclature, but it's a very big one in terms of meaning. And since then I've used it in my branding courses that I teach at the University of Iowa, and talking about who you serve. And you very distinctly aren't just talking about dog owners.
Made
the point of talking about dog parents. So for someone listening that might not get that, what's the basis behind that thinking?
I mean, a dog owner is a person who looks at their dog as a piece of property, and it might be, you know, someone who, you know, the dog greets them when they come home, but the dog lives in the garage and, you know, isn't as big of a family member as kind of how our culture has shifted in the past couple decades. A dog parent is someone who, you know, throws a birthday party for their dog and makes sure that they have the perfect pupcake, and, you know, might also have like an Instagram for their dog. And, you know, the dog is definitely allowed on the couch, or, you know, the dog is allowed to snuggle with you in bed. So there's a big difference between dog owner and dog parent. And we definitely make products for dog parents. But, you know, we also love serving dog people as a group. And we look at dog people as like people who view loving dogs as like a core part of their identity.
Well, what I really love about that is you talk about the core part of the identity. And as such, I think that it's kind of a perfect example of a strategy that fits the audience too, because if you are those people, it immediately means something to you. The difference to someone that isn't in that group, they might miss it entirely because it wasn't meant for them. It doesn't apply to them, to the owner crowd.
Totally.
And I think that's something that brand builders everywhere should strive for. And I'm not even going to remark about the dog awesomeness in the background because, you know, normally, you know, that would be something that we would say would interfere on the sound quality. But I think that's perfect ambiance for what we're talking about. And, you know, another story, and I don't know if this is one that you have, but it reminds me of, is also when I heard Henrik speak, you talk about things that mean something to your audience and others, and something that won't mean something to someone else, or vice versa, something that your people might love and might offend others. He told this wonderful story, and probably this might segue into your world dealing with content and entertainment, about the social media themed idea of hump day.
Yeah, hump day is a thing that I think, so I started at Bark in 2012, and you know, hump day normally just means like middle of the week,
sure.
Gotta get over the hump. But in the dog world, humping is also has a very different meaning, and it's also a very common thing and something that we find pretty hilarious as dog people in the dog world. And so we celebrate hump day, usually by posting videos or GIFs or pictures or even an entire email blasted out to our whole audience, you know, celebrating this most special of weekdays, the hump day.
I love it. And the pictures speak for themselves. I will find one or two and embed them in our show notes here, because it's if again this nuance is lost on you, which it should not be, thinking about dogs and hump day, you can check that out. But I think the point he made, that I think it's easy to have the quick dogs humping laugh about it. But he also made another point that I really like, that this is another example I often cite in class, because in being bold, in saying something, in standing for something for your audience, you know, this is a great example of something that, you know, I'm sure there were discussions that this could maybe offend some people, right?
I think like we've always operated under like, if it makes us giggle in the office, and you know, this is a pretty humor infused office, then we're pretty free to post it. We've kind of had Henrik specifically, and like the culture of our company is pretty laissez-faire about, you know, if you offend someone, we apologize for it. And I've apologized many, many times in my 5-year career here so far. But no, I don't actually think we talked about hump day. I think I just started doing it because I thought it was funny. And, you know, it has become a part of our larger culture. And it is a representation of kind of the rock and roll edginess that we try to, the dog rock and roll edginess that we try to live by each day. And I think like when you try to toe the line too much, you become super vanilla and nobody's interested in what you have to say. So, you know, it's more appealing to break the rules and, have to apologize for it than be boring.
Well, it's one of those things that's easy to kind of say and nod along with, but people get scared at the idea of, if you're creating a bold brand that stands for something, you may, I mean, turn some heads, but you may offend a person, upset a person or two, and that's nothing that anyone sets out to do. But I think the other risk is greater, like you said, of ending up too vanilla in a very, very distracted digital world that we all find ourselves in.
Completely. And I think like last week, for example, we sent, we've been focusing a lot on our email newsletter. And last week we sent out an entire email dedicated to this pug named Lady Puggington on Instagram, who, took a dump in the middle of the road and then ran into a parked car. And we could not stop laughing about it all afternoon when we found this video. And we're like, you know what, this has to be a dedicated email. And, you know, we had quite a few emails back from our audience saying that we are disgusting and this is shameful. But, you know, we apologized and said, you know, we thought it was funny. So sorry about that. You know, we'll probably do another pooped themed email in the future. It's not going to stop us, but we do listen to people, and it starts a conversation with your audience, and, you know, it's a pretty real conversation. And, you know, sometimes they are really fun to have.
Well, and not to sound like the trite marketing communications professional, but isn't that kind of what we're here to do, to start those conversations? I mean,
exactly.
And back to what the first thing you said, it's about something bigger than products too.
Totally.
So you talked about, you know, with regard to Hump Day, of if it makes us giggle, we feel free to post it. And you talk about the dog parents. Are there other specific exercises? It seems like, you know, the surface level takeaway is know your people. But how do you do that? And how do you bring that into practice every day?
Yeah, I mean, I think with our team, for example, we only hire people at this company who totally get the dog world and people who love dogs. Not everybody has a dog here, but they understand what it's like to love a dog, and they're passionate about it. So I think like the first step is, you know, we're a little bit of a cultish company when you think about like how we view the world and how the rest of the world views like things that we do. And so the first step into like getting people who understand that culture is by hiring only them. I think, you know, cat people or gerbil people, they would come here and start working day one and think all of us are insane. And we probably are. But, you know, it's a lot easier to write things and have humor and your content and your entertainment and your products come from a really natural spot when, you know, it is your natural spot, when there is no fabrication of a persona, when we're not trying to like go after a certain demographic, when that demographic is us. So that's kind of how we've done it here. We've never used an agency for any of our social media or any of our outside communications. If we do use someone outside, we make sure that they are fully briefed on our level of insanity before we let anything get out into the world that represents who Bark is.
Well, and I think that there's, you know, there's, like you said, of people who get dogs. And I think that that is so big because it's not just limited to, like you said, that not everybody here owns a dog, but I think that there is a difference there. And I mean, I think that, you know, kind of the, you know, what you're really talking about is culture as well. And, you know, it's funny because you hear those things for strong brands kind of cited, but usually, I mean, understanding your audience and, you know, hiring for and building a strong culture. But I don't always think that you see those grouped together like you're talking about, because they're really one and the same. They're not separate pieces of your overall strategy. They really are the overall strategy.
Totally. And I think, I mean, I've always, since I got this job in 2012, I've always felt really lucky that we have a subject matter, one that people are so passionate about and are just, it like dogs on the internet and animals on the internet are like, it is like the backbone of the internet, it feels like sometimes. So I feel very lucky that like so many people care about what we're trying to talk about. And that's just made branding and culture and everything that we do so much easier.
Well, and again, as I think about that too, I mean, that is an easy thing when, you know, I'm sure there's listeners out there thinking, oh, that's a cool dog business. We sell, you know, garage door springs or something. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's actually a strategy or a component of the strategy that you can take away too.
Totally. I think like, when you think about a content strategy for something that feels mundane, there's always something, someone out there who is really passionate about it. And the key to, you know, finding people to help you create content for your company or for your brand is to figure out how to find those people, who will, you know, have educational things to say about your product or, have like a sense of humor about what you're trying to sell. I look at Denny's and they're one of the brands that I've always admired for a long time on social media. And you would think that, you know, diner breakfast food is not something that you can amass a cult following of, but they have such an irreverent and like wacky take on how they present something that feels so mundane, that they've been able to make it work. And I think, you know, if your garage door springs, you find that person who, who's a woodworker, who's, you know, really interested in, you know, there's a lot of things that you can talk about on the periphery of garage door springs that, you know, it makes your wood shop possible. It makes, your band's practice location. Like, there are a lot of, once you like expand the scope of like what your product can mean to people, you can find really interesting ways to talk about it.
Well, that's another great strategy too. Like you said, expanding the scope of what your product means to people. And I think, you know, there's a book called What Great Brands Do, and Denise Lee Yone, the author who's been on this podcast, kind of asks that extrapolating question of what business are you really in? And I think that, you know, that's something that you alluded to earlier also in, you know, that you're, you know, really about, you know, why Bark is more than just a products company as well. You also, this reminds me, you do great live events. And I think that probably because of the kind of the thinking of Bark Box and, you know, box-based businesses, that we think of them as these kind of online brands. But you do a lot of in-person experiences that I think that integration is so important when you have something online that is capable of convening and meaning something offline as well.
Totally. And I think like events, well, one, like events is just like a natural extension of, we don't view ourselves in the dog toy and treat business. We view ourselves as we're in the joy business, with which happens to be like a subset of like loving a dog. But the events are, you know, they're not going to, you know, get you exposure with millions of people unless you play the PR game right with the specific event that you're working on. But you are able to create more meaningful, deep connections with a small subset of your super customers. And events, like, it was just natural for us because there's not much cooler. There's not much of a cooler thing to do on a Saturday afternoon than hang out with a bunch of dogs and talk to dog people about your dog.
Well, I think that's the other thing, that the power that you have by convening that, even if it's not like some sort of Bark commercial, which, you know, you wouldn't want to do anyways, but the power of connecting and of the brand being kind of the convening conduit for those connections is so powerful.
Totally. And I think like with anything that we do, and one thing that, you know, I've always tried to make sure that we were super careful of this, is that people like brands who are not super self-congratulatory, and people like it when, you know, you probably enjoy the presence of a person who is a little self-deprecating, has a sense of humor about themselves, is fun, than someone who is always touting off their accomplishments and trying to sell you stuff. So we just kind of take that natural, you know, person-to-person experience and apply it to our brand and how we behave with our customers and our audience.
That's great. You know, the other thing that you employ that could be challenging to some is the is humor, as you've talked about. So if there are those out there that are afraid to try something that is a little tongue-in-cheek, what advice could you offer there?
I think, so I don't really find myself to be the funniest person in the room ever. And, I actually think that like, if you've sat here and told me to tell you a joke, I would probably, you know, look deer in headlights and, tell you something really dumb. But one thing I've known that it was a weakness of mine. And so I have only hired people on my team who I find genuinely funny, who I want to sit next to and just like listen to them talk about the state of the cheese sticks in the refrigerator. So I think like step one is like, don't try too hard. Humor is something that it needs to come naturally. And if it doesn't come naturally to you, then find someone who will help you out who is funny. And I think like, I don't know, like, again, like we've had hits and misses and we've frustrated and, you know, alienated parts, small parts of our audience because we are trying to make a joke and not everybody is in on the joke or not everybody gets the joke. But, you know, humor is so integral to who we are and who we see ourselves and like the soul of Bark that we are okay with losing a few people to, you know, get the people who get us.
You know, you mentioned something in there that I think is a great tip for people listening too, much in the same way that, you know, kind of your idea on culture and audience, understanding your audience is kind of one and the same. I think that big takeaway was, you know, we worry so much and it's stressful for as powerful as humor is. It's a very stressful topic. I got to be funny. I got to say something funny. I don't know how to do that. I'm not funny. But almost all of us, you know, if we think of when was a time when you felt funny, it's usually when you're around your friends laughing about, like you said, kind of shared circumstances. And I think that's a great way, and one that's not often mentioned. You know, it's easy, and I think great advice. And I've taken some improv classes and have some background there. And of course, there's all of those kind of expected roots to humor and such. But mm-hmm. But I think that what you said about being around other people is a great way to increase your funniness potential.
Totally, and I think in the last 5 years of hiring people who are much funnier than me, I do find it a little bit easier to sit down and when I'm like, I need to write something funny, it does come a little bit easier than it used to.
Well, I know. And so often, I mean, and that's kind of, you know, to demystify how, you know, in a lot of creative industries like Hollywood, you know, that's how a writer's room works. It's people mm-hmm. around bouncing those ideas off of each other. So, you know, you start riffing on things and that's where, you know, an idea like Hump Day can come from.
Totally.
So in thinking about everything that is the Bark Box, the Bark brand, what is something that is behind the scenes powering everything that maybe isn't something that we've mentioned, like understanding your audience and internal culture?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's a little bit more tactical that, you know, is not visible to someone who is just kind of experiencing our shenanigans online and offline is we map out, you know, what are all of the touch points that we have with people that are a small audience? What are all the touch points that we have with the media audience? What are the big audience opportunities that we have? And big audience stuff is like our social media, it's PR, it's our ads. It's our barkpost.com, mm-hmm. which is our content and entertainment website that we've been building up over the past few years. And then kind of constructing a calendar and many different like little punches that collectively end up reaching hundreds of millions of people every month. But you might not recognize that, you know, that one Instagram post where the goat was wrestling with the dog was actually a part of a larger strategy in entertaining and garnering a new audience. So I think I think like when you're building a brand today, one of the things that has changed a lot is, you know, you don't have, we've never had like big branding budgets to go after audience. We've had no budget and just people to make entertaining things. And, you know, we've had to argue for why that goat wrestling with a puppy is important to the future of our brand. So I think just thinking of branding as thousands of tiny punches every month that add up to something huge is probably the biggest thing that people might not realize about our work.
Love that. Branding is thousands of tiny punches that add up every month. Now, do you have you talked about tactical. Do you have a tactical way of mapping that out or of visualizing that you use? Because, I mean, what you listed off, and I'm sure many feel this as they try to get their arms around everything that they're doing, what that looks like or how that works.
Yeah, I mean, things change a lot, and especially like in a digital age, something that you did last month that was a big deal to you can be completely irrelevant next month. And you've got to constantly be watching for that, staying fresh, and you know, whether that's like actually being on social media and exposing yourself to all of the trends and following people who you think are cool, who you want to be more like is helpful. And I also, one of the things that we do well, that's also a little bit tactical is, you know, we analyze our main goals from like the content point of view are engagement and reach. And so by analyzing what does well and doing postmortems, everybody on the team does postmortems on what they put up in the last week that performed well, what flopped, and what are the takeaways from that, and just constantly like building and trying to get somewhere new, being aware of the new trends and testing them, trying them, like going after that new meme format and seeing if it works with our audience. If it doesn't, then like ditch it and let's move on. And then when you kind of go through that process of, you know, analyzing what work you've done before, what work you did last week, and letting it inform the work that you do next week, you start to see the list of like, okay, here are my big audience opportunities, here are my medium audience opportunities, and here are my small audience opportunities. And then you can make a calendar that kind of extrapolates off of those things, but also remembering that the internet can throw a wrench into your plan right at any time, and you've got to be nimble and you've got to be like, well, okay, and not get super upset about it, because that's the nature of where we are today.
That's so true. Brick by brick.
Yep.
So Stacy, when wrapping up the On Brand podcast, I always ask guests for a brand that has made them smile recently. And it's sort of my version of the gotcha question. However, I realize I've unintentionally made it into an actual gotcha question by providing you absolutely no prep. So I would think, knowing what I know about you, that there has to be a brand that has made you smile recently.
Yeah. One small company called Shinesty, who sends out these super bro-y emails about swim trunks, and they have like suits with patterns of like three leaf clovers or shamrocks and four leaf clovers and all of these different things. But the way that they talk about their products, they know their audience. They know that only bros like my little brother who like love frat parties will be buying these things. And so they just go all out in marketing these things. So I definitely recommend subscribing to their email, because I am not their audience at all, but I really enjoy the ridiculous things that they do in all of their content and advertising.
I love that. That's always, that's always great to hear, and funny to hear when you could recognize someone else's great voice and understanding of their audience. And yet, what can you do when it's not you? You want to you want to help them and spread the word, but at the same time, you may not be buying a pair of trunks anytime soon. Yep. Stacy, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
About who I am? Well, you can find me on social media or on LinkedIn, or if you you know, have any specific questions, you can shoot me an email. I'm just stacy@barkbox.com. But yeah, I mean, you can find all of the work that we do. Go to barkpost.com and sign up for our newsletter. Just subscribe to BarkBox's Instagram, and you'll see, you might see me in the background laughing really hard at, you know, our pug getting a massage in the middle of the office. So
that is awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Stacy, thank you for joining us on Brand. And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Melanie Diesel gave us a shout on Twitter for our episode featuring Melanie Diesel on native advertising. So Melanie, thank you for listening and for joining us as a guest. Last but not least, you can find links to everything that we talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can find links to everything that Stacy and I talked about, including some of these great hump day picks right over there. You can also subscribe to the show via iTunes and Stitcher. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. And remember, On Brand is brought to you by my book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. You can order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.